Now, January used to be a pretty quiet time in Australian politics, something of a partisan ceasefire, but not anymore. This year, obviously, it's been particularly busy and particularly politicised because of the response to the Bondi terrorist attack. Parliament obviously returned to pass the hate speech and gun legislation. And next week is the start of the first full parliamentary sitting fortnight of the year. And there's talk already of a leadership spill in the Liberal Party. Let's talk to Charles Croucher, the political editor of Nine News. Charles, thanks so much for joining us on the programme.
No, morning, Nick.
There is no rest for the wicked, is there? I mean, January did used to be this sort of quiet time, and now it's almost become the sort of fighting season in Australian politics. The political year seems to start earlier and earlier.
It does. We sort of get through my EFO at the sort of midway through December, and that was the put down the weapons kind of period, and you get through to the end of the tennis when you sort of tune in to see if the Prime Minister gets booed at the men's or women's final, and then we'd all laugh at that and move on. But this year, through some unfortunate circumstances and horrific circumstances at Bondi, and then through what's become a self-inflicted loss with the coalition, it really has been an aggressive and dramatic start to the year. I keep thinking Nancy Pelosi used to say, tell her Congress to own August, which is their summer month, where you'd go out and really lay the foundations for a year ahead. I think of that line a lot when we get through January, whether it's bushfires or tragedies or just surviving the summer. I don't think the coalition will have owned January the way they would have hoped going into the year.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I remember running a piece a couple of years ago saying that had changed. January had become this kind of politicised month. We saw that in 2023, ahead of the Voice referendum. Peter Dutton made a lot of the political running early in the year. Last year, ahead of the federal election, politicians started trading blows well in advance of Australia Day. I always remember after Copenhagen, do you remember the climate change conference that Kevin Rudd went to? He didn't get the climate deal that he wanted. And Tony Abbott really used January to whack Kevin Rudd, and there was no kind of response. And I always thought that sort of laid the foundation for Kevin Rudd's downfall. It does seem to be, as you say, that, you know, it's the Pelosi doctrine, maybe, that you've got to own the kind of holiday month.
Well, Tony Abbott only just come in the month before. He was elected, I think, the first day of December the year before. So that was a real introduction by fire for him and hitting the ground running, which was so his style. So I think you're right. It's become that way. Maybe it's because instead of we used to think that people would switch off, be it they would switch off from newspapers or television, I think these days with people with their phones in their hands and such a focus on the one monoculture, which seems to remain sport, that perhaps that's not happening anymore, and people are still engaged, and be it because of the Donald Trump sense phenomenon, and we have to stay engaged at all times because who knows what's happening around the world, that it spills through to Australia. I'm not sure. I think the politicians would like a little longer off, and I think we could probably all do with a bit longer off as well ourselves, but this is the world we live in now, and this is something that leaders will have to adapt to in the future.
And there was a very Freudian use of the word spills there, Charles, and that leads us immediately into what's probably or might happen next week. Tell us what's happening in the Liberal Party. Tell us what's happened this week between Andrew Hastie and Angus Taylor and what this means for Susan Lee.
I'm going to jump in with the one spill we know will happen, and that's the Nationals. That will happen Monday. I think David Littleproud's very safe on that front, whether Colin Boyce is using this to try and flush out one of the other potential leaders in the party or using it as his own excuse to head off to the to One Nation. The mood around the Parliament's pretty split with which of those two scenarios it is, but I don't think anyone, and possibly even Colin Boyce, thinks that at the end of Monday night, Colin Boyce is going to be the leader of the National Party. Then we get to the Liberal Party, and this is what you're alluding to, the meeting Thursday morning between Andrew Hastie and Angus Taylor, along with a sort of cohort of senators, each who have their own sphere of power within the right wing of the Liberal Party, the right faction, is ominous for Susan Lee. Now, whether it happens this week, I'm sort of on the mind now that I think that it will happen a bit later on. But the problem for Susan Lee is now there is a clear challenger in Angus Taylor, and what lies ahead is this series of traps that are coming up. Now, the most obvious one comes Sunday with the first of those published polls that will come out since the coalition is split, and the fact that there are nervous backbenchers looking at polls tends to mean that the polls will get worse. And if it gets worse than where it is right now, it's in real dire territory. So that will prompt some in the Liberal Party to think about a move. From there, she will have to eventually name a front bench if the coalition don't get back together. And that has a whole series of traps in it as well, because if you don't promote the right people or leave some vocal opponents on the back bench, then perhaps that's the cause that causes someone to spill the leadership. Then you have the two sitting weeks of parliament, and that's always a risk for a leader, because that's the time when the leadership can be spilled. And then if you get through the month of February, you're straight into that South Australian election. And that looks like, at the moment, according to the polls, a wipeout for the Liberal Party. And that would be clearly devastating for South Australian Liberals, but also it would cause every moderately marginal MP in the federal Liberal Party to look at their own margins, their own electorate, and think, God, am I next? And that often causes a stir and a spill as well. The parliamentary sitting calendar has been deliberately, I think, by Tony Burke and his team, deliberately have factored in a two-week sitting period right after that South Australian election. And from the moment that calendar came out, I sort of circled that, went, that could be trouble.
She smashed through one of the most durable glass ceilings in global politics, really, didn't she? Becoming the first female Liberal leader. But then she found herself on what is often called the glass cliff. You know, women often tend to assume leadership positions in these terrible situations where they're almost set up to fail. I mean, was she doomed to fail from the start? Was this the kind of inevitability that at some stage she would face a leadership challenge?
I'd say likelihood rather than inevitable. I mean, Susan Lee has made her career in overcoming doubters and overcoming the odds and defying those who thought otherwise of her. However, the margin at that first leadership spill with Angus Taylor, I think it was 3 or 4 votes, and then even that margin got whittled away because the Senate structure changed on the 1st of July. Old senators left, new senators came in, and that narrowed her margin again. Giselle Kapterian in one of the Northern Sydney seats actually lost a recount, so she left the party room. That was another vote for Susan Lee gone. So from that moment, it was a really fragile margin and a fragile leadership. But to hark back to our conversation about Tony Abbott, I mean, he won the leadership, Liberal leadership against Malcolm Turnbull by a single vote back in 2009. So it doesn't mean it's inevitable that it will all fall apart. However, in these circumstances, with such active and talented and vocal backbenches, when you think of Jacinta Nabor-Jemper-Price now, Andrew Hastie, Jane Hume, Sarah Henderson, it's a lot of, if not enemies, then opponents to make that can make a lot of trouble for you. As well as those with aspirations of their own to be the leader. So, you know, it would be remarkable to have 3 leaders in 1 year, which is what the Liberal Party are staring down the barrel of. But I think that's probably the most likely scenario at the moment.
Yeah, it's just extraordinary, isn't it? You're listening to Saturday Extra with me, Nick Bryant. I'm talking to Charles Croucher, Nine Network's political editor. A lot of people are fixated, Charles, by the party room politics of the Nats and the Liberals. But away from Canberra, the biggest story in Conservative politics is the rise of One Nation. I mean, really surging in the polls. A trend is emerging there. Do you think Pauline Hanson could soon emerge as the kind of de facto leader of the opposition? Not in parliamentary terms, obviously, but in polling terms, which is essentially what is happening in Britain right now with the rise of Nigel Farage.
It's the most obvious comparison, isn't it? The reform comparison to One Nation, the fact that you've had a high-profile former Deputy Prime Minister in Barnaby Joyce defect also mirrors that series of Tory defections to reform in the UK. I think in the public conversation and in the media conversation in public life, Pauline Hanson, you're going to hear a whole lot more of because of that surge in the polls. And there was a South Australian YouGov poll that came out at the end of last week that had Labor first, One Nation second, the Greens third, and then the Liberal Party. Now, I can't fathom the idea the Liberal Party would finish fourth in a published poll. But that's kind of where it's at. So that is prompting a momentum to One Nation that even in the height of the late 90s, Pauline Hanson hasn't seen. Whether this is sustainable, history says it's unlikely, but these are unusual times. Whether we have a situation like reform I think will be harder in our parliament just on the basis of compulsory voting and preferential voting, which sort of harks against One Nation and against third parties. However, it is clear the electorate is in the mood for someone other than the two major parties. So whilst if history is the guide, it's a no. Perhaps this is one of those times when history isn't a guide. It will largely depend on One Nation's ability to capitalise on this surge in popularity, and also then when the rubber meets the road, you know, what are the policies? Who are the spokespeople for each of the parliamentary portfolios? That all gets a bit harder. And then, of course, it's personnel. And Pauline Hanson's had a terrible run with the people that she has helped get elected, either turning on her, turning on the party, or turning on the electorate in the past.
I'm struck that we haven't even spoken about the Prime Minister yet. Anthony Albanese. I mean, he must be just sitting back at the moment and watching the sort of implosion of the Liberal Party. I mean, I think I wrote before Christmas, I think after Bondi, I'm not sure if the phrase "he's a lucky Prime Minister" will ever be applied again to Anthony Albanese. But certainly the politics in the opposition at the moment are helping the government, I guess.
Yeah, I think the Prime Minister, who is, you know, always a tactical person and thinks in terms of Parliament, knows the way to use Parliament to his own advantage. I think if you spoke to him honestly and said, you know, is this how you thought this would play out, he would say no. I think the trap that was laid in the legislation was by trying to handcuff the gun laws to the hate speech laws and use that to wedge the Nationals and the Liberal Party. Now, as it turned out, they split the bill at the demand of the Nationals and Liberal Party, and it still caused a wedge through these hate speech laws that you had this amazing scenario where the majority of the Nationals in the House of Representatives abstained from voting. Michael McCormack voted for the laws, and two MPs, including Colin Boyce, voted against. So suddenly you've got the Nats in all three positions on that one, and then that's before the drama of the Senate that caused the whole split. So there were tactics in this. This isn't just pure luck, but even that wasn't the tactic I think that most in the Labor Party would have expected. The question, as always, you know, Anthony Albanese now has this unusual and fortuitous situation for him in that he's got a big majority in the lower house. He's got working majorities in two ways in the upper house through either the Greens or the Coalition. And he's got almost unanimous backing of his caucus, unlike any Labor leader's had for a long time. Mm. Now's the time to get things done. And I think while it's an opportunity to do more, it also has expectations that more is done from the electorate. So it can become a slippery slope if things stall or if we see, you know, two or three more interest rate hikes, as some are predicting. I think it's going to get the pressure back on the Prime Minister pretty quickly, because despite all that's going on in the world and all that's going on in Australia, that cost of living is still the number one issue for voters when you speak to the polls.
Yeah, Charles Cranchy, you've got a busy couple of weeks ahead. Thanks for taking time away from your family, who I think were heckling you at the beginning of the interview, actually, but
was a series of birds here in Canberra. It's one of the joys of the bush capital. They are very loud.
That was the birds. All right. Well, fantastic. Yeah. The tweet of the week. Charles Croucher, thank you so much for joining us on Saturday Extra.